Welcome, everybody. Today we are very happy to have Professor Hong Liu from MIT, and he will tell us about emergent times in holography. Please keep your microphones muted and only unmute if you want to ask questions. Hong, the floor is yours.
Okay, yeah, thanks for the invitation. So we'll be talking about some recent work with my student Sam Lutheser, which appeared in the short paper and then in the much longer paper. So yeah, when we talk about quantum gravity, so one of the first questions we encountered is called the problem of time. So in quantum mechanics, we have absolute time in order to talk about evolution. But in gravity, a time is just a coordinate. So, and can be arbitrarily changed by time reprioritization. So most of the time, the time is meaningless, okay. And here I say most of the time, because in some of the situations, it's better. For example, in ADS, there is actually an absolute, say, asymptotic time, because the gauge transformations go to zero. I mean, a gauge transformations are supposed to vanish at infinity, and ADS have a time-like boundary. So that the asymptotic time is not, so it's invariant under different morphisms. And of course, this feature underlies the success of ADS-CFT. And this is also the reason why for many other, for quantum gravity in space-times of other asymptotics is much more tricky and much more difficult, because there we don't have a asymptotic time to talk about the evolution, etc. But even for physics in ADS, we still face the question, can the asymptotic time be sensibly extended to the interior? Okay. And can we actually talk about time in the interior of the space-time in the diffeomorphism environment way? And this is an important question, because many issues concerns such kind of interior time. And the situation is better when there's a time translation symmetry. Say if the system has a global time-like Killing vector, and then there's indeed, then you can extend this boundary time to the interior in an unambiguous way, because there's a preferred time slicing for the box space time. But in general, the situation is much more, it's much less clear. So in this talk, I want to consider an intermediate situation. So this is the story of internal black hole in ADS, which is conjectured to be dual to two copies of the CFT in the thermal field double state. So this is one of the best known examples, say, of the duality. So this example is interesting because outside the horizon, so we can separate, say, this standard Kruskal diagram for the black hole in ADS into four different regions. So R and L are regions outside the horizon. So each has a asymptotic boundary. And so there's a Killing vector, there's a time-like Killing vector in the R and L region. So we can extend the boundary time without much subtlety to the R and L region. So this is also is the reason why the holography in the right and L region are straightforward. Okay. But this system also have, but the time, okay, this Schwarzschild time, which is the extension of the boundary time to the bulk, actually breaks down at the even horizon. And there's no time-like Killing vector in the F and the past region. And so the existence of this future and the past region, okay, raises many puzzles. So ever since the beginning days of the ADS-CFT. So those puzzles including, say, how do we really interpret the physics in the future and the past region, say intrinsically from the boundary theory perspective. Say, how do we describe Kruskal-like time evolution in the from the boundary perspective? And how do we understand the emergence of the horizon in the boundary theory and the associated causal structure? And also, even more mysterious is that because of this space-time structure, we can actually have objects, say, falling from left and the right region, and then they can join, they can interact and meet in the future region. Okay. But in the duality, the two CFT actually don't interact with each other. And there's no interaction between them, even though they are in the entangled state. And so all these questions, our goal is to develop a framework to address those questions. So first, let me just quickly mention what are our standard understanding of the boundary descriptions of bulk evolutions. So the simplest description of the bulk evolution is to use the boundary Hamiltonian. So suppose we denote the Hamiltonian for the boundary theory to be HR, for the right theory to be HR and the left theory to be HL. And then the simplest evolution is just to evolve by HR minus HL. And this corresponding in the bulk corresponding to, say, if you take T equal to zero slice, and then that's corresponding to the standard Schwarzschild evolution. And then we'll take to this slice. And this evolution can only, say, involve regions outside the horizon. You can also think instead of, say, HR minus HL, you can also think of some other, say, combinations of, say, HR and HL. For example, HR plus HL. But actually, any other combination of HR and HL, they are not well defined in large N limit. So they actually don't have regular action on the black hole geometry. So for example, heuristically, HR and HL will act. Say if you take T equal to zero Cauchy slice, they will act on the we'll move this Cauchy slice in this way, but there's a kink at the horizon. Okay, you can also look at other combinations, so they don't have a well-defined evolution. So, but we would like to understand is how to describe this kind of smooth evolution, say from one Cauchy slice. Say from t equal to zero to another Cauchy slice, which can which cross the horizon, okay, which can just like standard Kruskal-like evolution. And since, as I mentioned, none of the combinations of the standard Hamiltonian can do this job, and then we can only expect that such kind of evolution has to be emergent in the boundary theory. And the goal of this talk is to explain how this kind of, say we call infolding time emerges in the boundary theory. Okay, so we will construct explicitly in the boundary such kind of Kruskal-like evolution. And also we will explain how the horizon and associated causal structure emerges from the boundary theory. So I should also mention, there have been many, many work which describe, say, for example, there are many observables in the boundary theory, say like correlation functions, entanglement entropy, complexity. So in calculating those quantities, we often had to use geometries inside the horizon, okay. But in those calculations, the geometry inside the horizon is just, say some intermediate step to calculate those observables. And so there was never, say, an emergent Kruskal-like time or the causal structure in those discussions. There also has been work on, say, bulk reconstruction, say take an operator at some point in the Bach, and then you try to find the to express that operator in terms of the boundary operators. And of course, that is straightforward to do for region outside the horizon. But for region inside the horizon, you can also express such operator in terms of left and the right CFTs with the help, okay, with the help of the Kruskal evolution in the Bach. And also, yeah, with the help or analytic continuation across the horizon. So our goal is not say to express some operator, just to express some operator in terms of the boundary CFTs. And we want to understand where does this time come from, okay? Good, so here is the plan of the talk. So first I will just outline the main results. So what we can achieve. And then I will do a review of the entanglement structure in relativistic quantum field theory. In particular, this structure, so-called the type three volume algebra, and the associated half-sided modular inclusion and translation structure. So that will be used as the main inspiration and the tool which we can construct, say, the Kruskal time evolution from the boundary. Okay. And then I will conclude with some discussions, yeah, if I have time. So before I proceed, do you have any questions? Okay, good. Yeah, then I will just first describe the main result. So we will show, okay, in the boundary theory, we can construct, say, evolution operators, some Hermitian operator, and then you can exponentiate to get some unitary operator to have the following properties. Okay, so first, this involves both an R and L degree freedom in a highly non-trivial way. Okay, so this aspect is obvious if you want to describe, say, the physics behind the horizon, because the physics behind the horizon, they are causally connected with both CFTL and the CFTR. And so in order to describe what's happening there, you have to involve both R and L degrees freedom in a non-trivial way. Okay. So I explained earlier that if you just have some kind of a linear combination of HR and HL, they don't do it. And the second very crucial property is that such operator actually has a spectrum bounded from below. So in quantum mechanics, normally the way we distinguish time, say from spatial, say we distinguish time evolution from say spatial translation or some other internal symmetries, unitary transformation corresponding to some other internal symmetries, is that the Hamiltonian is bounded from below. Okay. And say momentum operator don't have this property, and neither are other symmetry generators. So for this reason, okay, for this reason, I will call this time, yeah, this a parameter associated with the generated by generated from such Hermitian operator, say a time, okay. And then given this kind of evolution operator, then we can try to act on the operator in your field theory. So here our assumption is that we assume that the ADS-CFT, standard ADS-CFT for the right and the left region. Okay, so that we can just apply the standard dictionary standard, so it's well understood. So I will assume that, okay. In particular, I will assume the Bach reconstruction for the right and L regions. So in particular, if I take a local Bach operator, say X is some point in the right region of the black hole. Say if I take some local Bach field, say some scalar field, say evaluated, say at this point X, so this will be interpreted as a boundary operator, okay. Yeah, because we already know how to reconstruct the Bach right region and the left region using the standard ADS-FT dictionary. So now we can act this evolution operator on such kind of this spark operator, which is interpreted as a boundary operator. And then we can show actually this taking the inside horizon for sufficiently large S. And not only that, but also this evolution exhibits sharp signatures over the horizon. And in the sense that this evolution can be used to generate, say, these future and the past regions with the right and L regions. Okay, so as I emphasize, our goal is to start from the ADS-CFT for the right and L regions so that we can actually understand that for the future and the past region. And yeah, and this S will be this new unfolding time. So we have a general procedure to construct such kind of operators, but you can do this very explicitly, say for the BTZ. So BTZ is the simplest examples. Yeah, it's essentially the simplest non-trivial examples. And if you go to higher dimension, of course, it's technically more complicated. And if you go to two dimension JT gravity, where you only have ADS2, and there, somehow this emergent time will be just generated by symmetry. So BTZ is the simplest example. Emergent time is not related to any symmetry. And so we will be able to construct infinite number of such kind of evolutions. So here, just for definiteness, I will just talk about one particular simple example, which we can construct very explicitly, okay? And so the feature, I'm going to talk about corresponding to this particular example, but similar features exist for all other examples. Yeah, for all other evolutions. Again, so we take this particular construct, a particular US, we act on these spark operators in the right region. And then it turns out, S equal to zero is the identity map. And then we consider, say, at some future time, if I call this S time. Turns out that there exists a non-zero, S zero greater than zero, the following thing happens. Okay, yeah, so this operator at the beginning, so this X is a point in the right region. And then by definition of the standard ADS-CFT story, this phi R is the operator in the right CFT. Okay, it's an operator in the right CFT. And then you find that then there's S zero, then for S smaller than S zero under this evolution, this operator remains in the right CFT. But then after this S zero, suddenly the CFT left with freedom, left CFT with freedom emerges in this evolution. Okay, so this happens sharply at S equal to S zero. And this is exactly what we intuitively expect, say if an operator is taken behind the horizon. Okay, so let's just consider the geometric picture. What do we expect? So if you have an operator originally in the right region, okay, and then of course this only involves the CFT right with freedom, but now you evolve a little bit, and then still remains in the right, and then you will still in the right CFT, but then. Then once you cross the horizon, then you are in causal connect. Then you are in causal connection with the left region, and then you must now involve the left some degree of freedom in the left CFT. Okay, and so this S zero then can be considered, say, as this boundary signature, say that you have crossing the horizon. So I want to emphasize, from the field theory point of view, this feature is highly unusual. Okay, so suppose if you say generate this US using some operator, say like HR plus HL, some simple combinations of HR and HL, and then under this evolution, because any operator on the right CFT compute with HL, So this will never generate any degree of freedom in the CFTL. Okay. So if this is just some simple combinations of HY and L, this will never generate, no matter how much you involve, will never generate any degree of freedom in CFTL. On the other hand, if you just take some general operator involving both CFTL and CFTR, and then this kind of evolution will immediately generate CFTL for any S zero not equal to zero. Okay, so the highly non-trivial thing here is that there's a finite range of this S zero. You still remain only in the right degree of freedom. But now there's a sharp point, somehow a CFTL emerges. Okay, so later I will mention, if I have time, I will mention this feature can only exist in the infinite end limit. Say in the finite end, this just cannot happen. Okay, so in the sense that we can say that the sharp horizon is only possible in the infinite end limit. So also I want to emphasize this behavior is something you can intrinsically describe. Just take any two quantum systems, just entangle them. Okay, you can ask, you take some operator in one CFT, you evolve it using some operator, whether this kind of behavior can appear. Yeah, so this can be formulated as a general behavior for general quantum many body systems, not necessarily say those with a long gravity pool. Okay. And so in this sense, this can be used as a general criterion to formulate, say, emerging horizon, say, if you have some general quantum systems. Okay. So for this reason, say if any two quantum systems, such kind of US and S0 exist, then we say they are causally connectable. Okay. Good. So now let me say a few words on this S0. Okay, so this S0 is just some parameter. You construct this US intrinsically from the boundary point of view, and then you just do this evolution, and then you somehow you find there's such a S0. Okay.
Question?
Then, yeah.
I just want to make sure you mentioned you will say something about the one domain correction. Just want to ask, suppose n is finite, is it correct that when s is smaller than s0, there's already some component of CFTL, but it's suppressed by some one domain?
Yeah, that's right. It's not suppressed by power one domain. It's more like we don't fully understand what's happening at finite n. So I would expect, say there's some kind of exponentially small tail in n if for any s zero greater than zero.
I see.
I believe this feature should be sharp order by order in perturbation theory in one over n. Say if you carry out, say here I'm describing, for this talk, I will focus on leading order in one over n expansion. But suppose you carry out to one over n to the fourth order, or to one over n to the, say, 100 order. If you do it order by order, I would think this horizon remains sharp. Yeah, but if you sum of all the perturbation theory, maybe this will not. Yeah, that I don't know. Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Good. So now let me say a few words about this S0. So now let me just draw the Kruska diagram. So suppressing the singularity and the boundary. So you assume that it should assume there's a boundary here, there's a singularity there, and then the UV axis corresponding to the horizon. And now let's suppose this initial point in the right region, say have a Kruska coordinate given by U0 and V0. Okay. And then turns out this S0 is precisely, it turns out that there exists such evolution, okay? It turns out this S0 is precisely given by minus U0. So in the right region, this U have a negative value, okay? So this negative U0 is precisely the law distance to take you from this point to the horizon, to the future horizon, say if you just translate along the U direction, okay? But actually, this evolution actually is non-local. Okay, Yeah, but nevertheless, yeah, this S0 is sharp. But if X is happens to be very close to the horizon, okay, to the past horizon, and then turns out actually this becomes a local transformation. So, and then this just become a Kruskal law translation. Okay, so here it just trivially just Kruskal law translation. But in general, for general point, the transformation is non-local, but with respect to the causal structure. Okay, in the sense that even though it's non-local, but still you see this the causal you see a sharp causal structure. So we can elaborate this a little bit more. Not only that this evolution sees the horizon a sharp horizon, can also see a sharp light cone. From the left region. So let's consider the following quantity. So let's imagine you have an operator on the right region. Again, this UV axis is the horizon. And then now you consider you have an operator, say phi r, says initially at some point x1 in the right region. And then imagine you have a lot of operator in the left region, which is phi l, x2. And now let's look at this commutator. So we evolve this right operator by some time, and then look at the commutator with the left region. Okay, so for anything, okay, so we are looking at the large and leading order in one way expansion. So on the gravity side, so this is leading order in the G Newton expansion. So at the leading order, we just have quantum field theory in the curved space time. So in order to have a non-zero a commutator with x2, phi l x2, then the evolution must enter the night cone. Say of the phi L X2. Okay. And then it turns out you find that this commutator is identically zero for S smaller than U1 plus U2. Okay. And but now become non-zero for S greater than U1 plus U2. And this U1 plus U2 is precisely again is the law distance if you want to translate the along the U direction. Okay. You will translate this point starting from x1 to go inside the light cone of x2. Okay, so even though this evolution is non-local, okay, thus, yeah, so this spread is a cartoon to show that the evolution is non-local, but this non-local behavior actually respects the sharp light cone structure. Okay, so. So even though for the general, yeah, so this U is a operator which you can, it's a general boundary evolution operator which you can act on any boundary operator and including those Bach fields, okay, which we represented as boundary operator. But just like any evolution operator acts differently on different operators. Okay, for example, if we look at the scalar operator and the corresponding to a Bach scalar field, and then its evolution will depend on, say, dimension of this operator. It turns out that this evolution becomes simpler, okay, when you take the dimension to be large. By large, I mean it's always only parametrically large as order one number, which is always independent of n, okay. So it turns out in this case, if we consider this a large mass, the scalar field in the bulk have a large mass, and also suppose we average over the boundary spatial directions, we just to make the technically simple, okay. And then you find actually this evolution, okay, this evolution become a local transformation in the Kruskal plane. Okay, so you just compute this quantity, okay. And now you find that this quantity actually actually can be written as a evaluated as a local field at some new point xs. So you start with some point x, and then the evolution give you the phi evaluated at some other point xs. And this xs transform related to the original s as follows. It transform, say as the following. So the Kruskal u just corresponding to a translation. And the Kruskal V, and then a transform in this way. Okay, yeah. So this Kruskal transformation is purely emergent. So, So in constructing this US, we did not put any information about the Kruskal coordinates, etc. Okay. And this just it's emergent from this evolution. And so to give you a little bit feeling about this VS transformation, you can see that if your initial point is close to the past horizon, for example, V0 is zero, then VS remains zero. And then you just have a pure US translation, pure U translation. And also this transformation is such that VS such that actually this leaves the boundary point still remaining on the boundary. Okay, so it takes a boundary point to another boundary point. Okay. And so here is the flow pattern. If I just take some initial point in the block, and the transformation pattern is like this. Okay, so take a point and then I evolve it. Going to not a positive S and a negative S. And now if I start with the t equal to zero Cauchy slice, I can also ask, how does this transform the whole slice? And then this will take the t equal to zero Cauchy slice into, say, into future slices like this. And the past slice in the past like that. Okay, so this realizes what I said earlier, this kind of smooth evolution, okay, across the horizon. So to summarize, what we want to do, or what we achieved, is you start with the standard ADS-CFT story for the right and L region, which are well understood. But those CFT story for the right and L region don't immediately tell you how the R and L should be connected, okay? Whether they should be future and the past region, etc. And then the existence of this US essentially patches this picture into this full, patches this R and L picture into the full Kruskal diagram. Okay. And so we call that this US leads to a new emergent important time. Okay, if you start with the T equal to zero slice, so in principle, you can cover the full Kruskal diagram. And also, as mentioned, there are infinite number of choices of such infinite times. So such kind of construction is actually, by definition, because it's a boundary construction, it's diffeomorphism invariant. So actually there's infinite number of such, say, diffeomorphism invariant time you can talk about. So these actually potentially give rise to, say, many new observables, et cetera. Okay, so any questions regarding the result I summarized so far?
I have a question. At some point, would you show the expression for this G operator?
No, I will not show the expression for the G operator because as I will explain later, this G operator is hard to construct in the boundary theory. But what can be constructed, the story is much easier, is this US. Is that, so there are theorems which guarantees the existence of such G. And then we can use various, say, things we know about this US, then we can actually constrain and construct this US directly. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Do you have it on the slide? Do you have an expression for US on the slide?
Yeah, so
it'd be interesting to see that.
Yeah, so the US is the I will not have an explicit expression for the US because that expression is in the paper.
Okay.
In the paper. And but essentially, for example, that's how the US acts. If you worked it out, that's how the US acts. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Can I ask?
In
your construction, the operator phi x knows it's in a black hole background because you're constructing that with some HKKL or some kind of standard construction, but It only knows about the black hole exterior.
Yeah.
And U is also, if you like, a state-dependent operator. Like, it knows that it's a black hole of a certain temperature or mass.
Right. Okay. So the U is constructed with the knowledge of the thermal field double state.
Okay. Okay.
So if you change the thermal field double state a little bit, the U will also change somewhat. Yeah. Explicit form of U.
Right. Okay. Okay. Yeah. And you showed some flows, but that's for a particular example of this U. I mean, on this slide,
that's right.
Talk about an infinite number of choices.
Yeah.
Okay. In the explicit flow you had for large mass, something was happening when S equals 1 over V naught.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, something, the evolution become singular. But you can actually, so here is related to the singularity story.
Okay.
So if you look at when you reach the singularity and you find that the singularity, because we know this transformation, we know where is the singularity geometrically.
Okay.
So you expect to see the singularity before you reach S equal to 1 over V naught. Before. I'm going to mention in the end, actually, seeing the singularity is actually tricky. So I think this story is not fully settled.
Is it tricky because you're in ADS3 or because you're doing the BTZ black hole, or is it generally tricky?
So I think maybe both.
Okay.
I'm going to maybe mention it at the end if I have time. Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
And you mentioned that in general the evolution is non-local. Like I would have thought that if I start with a local operator and I evolve it forward, I'd get some kind of support throughout the future light cone. Is that what you meant by non-local, or were you saying something?
It's something like that, but it's a little bit hard to pinpoint. Actually, this is something you may be able to give me some suggestions. So we have some operator U which act on this phi, so we can write down some complicated expression from this construction, from this action. And then you ask, how do I work out the spread of this quantity? But in the bulk, you have an equation motion.
Right.
So in principle, you can use equation motion to project this spread on any slice you want. So I don't know whether there's a canonical slice which you can project. You say, that's my canonical way of describing the spread of this operator. Yeah, so we haven't found such a canonical way to describe the spread. Yeah.
Okay, thanks. I should let you get on with your story. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Good. So let me just quickly motivate the tool we use to do this construction. And so this goes back a little bit to just to understand the entanglement structure of the relativistic CFT, QFT. So let's just consider, say, if you consider a general quantum system, normally we talk about entanglement between the, say, two subsystems. Say, if you separate the system by 1 and 2, and then we take the Hilbert space to be the tensor product of the Hilbert space for each subsystem. And then if you have some states, global states defined for the full system, for example, pure states, then you can construct, say, reduced density matrix, say, associated with one system by tracing out the other. And this reduced density matrix contains all the quantum information we want to know, say, about this system, okay, including, for example, the von Neumann entropy, which is often discussed. But the story actually, most of the time you only need to talk about this row one. Okay, you can just construct all different quantities using this row one. Okay, and there's something. It turns out this additional structure. Yeah, you can similarly construct row two. Okay, the corresponding row two. It turns out that this additional structure happens when both row one and row two are full rank. Okay, of course, for the we have a finite dimensional quantum system that only happens when row one and row two have the same dimension. Yeah, if the H1 and H2 have the same dimension. So when both row one and row two are full rank, and now here you can actually have additional structure, you can construct what is called the modular operator. And then you just define it by row two times row one minus one. Okay. So this operator have the a property that the that if you act, say if you exponentiate this operator by some imaginary amount, yeah. So essentially take the logarithm and then you generate the one parameter unitary group using this operator. And then you find that this evolution, okay, take the operator in system one, still in system one, and take operate in system two are still in system two. Okay, so the automorphisms operate algebra in system one and the two. Okay. So these are, say if you have a finite dimensional system, these are kind of trivial statements in the sense that because the row two commute with anything in row one, so this is automatically true, and similarly with that. So for finite dimensional quantum system, this does not really give you new information. But this can be used as alternative way to characterize these two systems are highly entangled. Because when row one and row two are full rank, they're highly entangled. Okay. So if they're not entangled, then row one would, then row one would be a pure state. And then that will only have rank one. So in the sense that modular flow, existence of modular flow is another way to see that the system are highly entangled. So now let's go to a quantum field theory. And now let's consider quantum field theory in Minkowski spacetime. So for simplicity, let's just consider entanglement between the right half space and the left half space, okay? And so for that purpose, we can just look at, say, divide the Minkowski spacetime into right windowless region, left windowless region, future and past windowless region, okay, according to the light construct, yeah, according to the causal completion of the right and left. So it's often said that if the system is in the Minkowski vacuum state, and then it can be interpreted as some of your double state between the right and the left windowless patches, okay. So this is the standard Unruh story. Okay, so this is the standard Unruh story. But strictly speaking, if you want to precise mathematically, this statement is actually only correct if you are in the system with a finite UV cutoff. Okay, so strictly speaking, this sum of your double statement is, sum of your double state statement is only correct, say if you put the system on the lattice. Okay, and there's no, and the splitting between the two does not concern any lattice point. Okay, so normally this distinction is not important. So for most of the physics we are interested in, this distinction is not important. And this picture I've generated many insights. Okay, into a structure of quantum field theory. But for what I'm going to talk about, and actually this distinction is crucial, okay? So I want to emphasize there are actually some fundamental differences between the discrete and the continuum cases, okay? And those fundamental differences will be useful. Yeah, will be important for our purpose. So now let me just make a comparison between the discrete and the continuum story, okay? By discrete, you just put the, imagine you put your system on the lattice, okay? Say on the spatial lattice, you can treat time as continuous. And so in this case, by definition, you have local Hilbert space for the L and the right regions, okay? And then your full Hilbert space can be written as a tensor product between right and L region. But in the continuum case, there's no such factorization. Because in quantum field theory, any state which quantized, say between the right windowless patch and the left windowless patch, they actually have infinite energy. Okay. And so they are not in your physical Hilbert space. And so in the continuum limit, there's no such factorization. And of course here, when you have tensor product structure for your Hilbert space, then you have reduced density matrix. But here you don't have it. For the continuum, you don't have it, then of course you don't have a reduced density matrix. And here you can talk about finite entanglement entropy. You can just trace over a density matrix, reduced density matrix to get entanglement entropy. So even though this entanglement entropy depends on your entanglement entropy depends on your lattice spacing, but it's well defined. But in the continuum limit, you can just not define it. Okay, suppose you take the continuum limit of the discrete case, and then you find those entropy that all become infinite. So there's no well-defined entropy in the continuum limit. So all those kind of quantities, say reduced density matrix, which we use to define entanglement for our ordinary quantum systems, don't actually apply to continuum QFT. Okay, I don't apply to continuum QFTs, but this one aspect remains. Is that actually in the quantum field theory, you can actually construct modular operators, say associated with the right and the left region, and then the modular flow exists. So you can construct modular operator which generates automorphisms, say of the operator algebra in the right region and in the right and in the left region. Okay. So in a sense, in the continuum limit, this modular operator and the modular flow are the only way you can tell, okay, you can talk about rigorously that this system is entangled, okay, between different regions. But there's also a sharp difference between the discrete and the continuum case in terms of the structure of the modular operator. So in the discrete case, as we wrote earlier, you can write it as rho q times rho one minus one. So in this case, the modular operator have a simple factorized structure between the right and the left, say series, okay. But in the continuum case, you cannot factorize it. It's actually involved the left and the right equals freedom in a somewhat complicated way. And so furthermore, in the discrete case, there's no sharp light cone, okay. So if you say start with two operators on the say space like separate operator on the single time slice, then evolve a little bit. And then for infinitesimal time, yeah, just for any non-zero time, and the commutator will be non-zero. Okay, it can be non-zero. And because of the, there's always can be small tails, which can, yeah, when you have a discrete case. But of course, in the continuum limit, we have the sharp light cone. So this is a distinction which we'll carry out. Yeah, we'll carry over to the black hole case, that the black hole only have, in the sense, the boundary theory will dual to the box geometry with a sharp light cone, sharp horizon only in the infinite end limit. Okay. And so it turns out all those differences, okay, between the continuum and discrete case can all be traced into one fundamental difference between the structure of the operator algebra in the Rindler right region. Okay. It turns out, they can all be traced. Say if you look at the operator algebra in the Rindler right region, turns out they have different structure. And for the discrete case, we have so-called the type one monomial algebra. And for the continuum case, you have so-called type 3-1 monomial algebra. Okay, so I will not go into details, say the definition of the monomial algebra and its classifications, et cetera, which is a little bit involved. So let me just mention that the type 1 monomial algebra is just the standard operator algebra we see in quantum mechanics. So if you have a Hilbert space and the bounded operators, say acting on that Hilbert space, and then give rise to this type one monomial algebra. And type 3-1 monomial algebra have very unusual feature is that say those classifications are based on the properties of the projectors of the algebra. Say say the you can look at the projection operators in your quantum theory, and from the properties of the projection operators, you can classify different volume algebras. So in this one, type three volume algebra, you only have infinite projectors. Just any projection operator, they all have infinite rank. And in particular, not only they have infinite rank, they're all equivalent to identity operators. Okay, they're all equivalent to identity operators. And so what's special? So you can heuristically think all these features as just some manifestation, say, of this type three or one volume algebra. And this is a general statement. So the story is general for relativistic QFTs. So for any local regions, I emphasize the local region, okay? The local operator algebra then can be associated with a type three one volume algebra. So even for quantum field theory, if you look at the operator algebra for the full space-time, okay? So modular subtleties due to infinite volume limit, et cetera, say consider say quantum field theory on the sphere. And so the quantum field theory on the full sphere, those operator algebra still type one, okay? Because they act on the QFT Hilbert space. Only it's the operator algebra for the local region, and then they become type three. And then the entanglement of for any local region can only be, it can be understood only in terms of modular flows. Okay. So my motivation to introduce this structure is because type 3-1 have a lot of distinct structure, which is not present for any other type of monomial algebra. So this is called the half-sided modular translation structure. Okay. So now let me just introduce a little bit mathematical language. So suppose M is a volume algebra, and then you can see the vector, which is cyclic and separating for M. So M here, you can just say, as an example, you can just consider the algebra of the operators in the quantum field theory in the right window region. So as I mentioned, that's a volume algebra. And then the vector here, you can just imagine it to be the vacuum of, just the Minkowski vacuum. Say that this vacuum is cyclic and separating for M, means that when you act this operator algebra of the right window region on the vacuum, the state space you get is dense in your full Hilbert space. So that means cyclic. By separating, it's that no operator will annihilate the vacuum. Okay, there's no operator in the right window region can annihilate the vacuum. So that means cyclic and separating. So cyclic and separating is also the infinite dimensional, say continuum version of what I said earlier, that this row one and the row two both have full rank, okay? And so this is like the continuum version of that kind of statement. Okay, so now let's imagine we have such a monomial algebra, which is say the right operator algebra in the right window region. And now let's suppose there exists a lot of monomial sub-algebra N of N, okay? With the following properties. The omega is cyclic for N. Okay, the omega is cyclic N means that if you act N on omega, is also dense. And now if you look at the modular flow generated by M, okay, so because the, this factor is cyclic separating for M, and then there exists a modular flow for this M algebra. So now if you look at the modular flow of M acting on M, and then suppose that for T smaller than zero, this does not take you outside M, okay? Suppose you satisfy these two properties, okay? So this is called half-sided modular inclusion, okay? And then you can prove some powerful theorem by Borchers and Westbrook in the 90s, they can prove can be shown that for type 3-1 algebra, then they exist a unitary group US with the following property. It's that this unitary group is generated by some operator which is bounded from below. Okay, and in particular, this unitary group leave your vacuum environment. Okay. So as I emphasized earlier, anytime you can construct the operator which is bounded from below, And the evolution generated by such operator is a candidate of emergent time. Okay. And so this can be used to generate new times. Okay. And so this will be the way we generate the new times to describe the cross-collect time in the black hole geometry. So before doing that, let me just give you a simple example just to give you some intuition of how this works. Okay, how this works. So let's just again look at this Rindler space-time, this Minkowski span with this Rindler region. Let's just look at 1+1 dimension. So let's look at the M to be the operator algebra in the right Rindler region. So this is a type 3 Bonhoeffer algebra. And now let's, and the modular flow is just the boosts, okay? Just standard the boost. And now let's look at the operator algebra associated with just a shifted wedge, say in this N region, okay? And N obviously is a subset of the M, so this algebra is a subset of N. And when we reach Schneider, N is also cyclic with respect to the vacuum. Okay, vacuum is also cyclic with respect to this N. And also under the boost, in one direction, take N goes to itself. Okay, say take any operating N under a boost with small T smaller than zero, we just take N still within N. Okay, so this subalgebra satisfies this kind of structure. And then this theorem tells you that there must exist a unitary evolution with this G expanded from below. Okay, so in this story, of course, we understand everything. Okay, we understand everything because this is just trivially Minkowski space-time, okay? So it turns out in this case, you can show that this G just corresponding to a translation along the X minus direction. Okay, and so this just corresponding translation in the X minus direction. And in particular, when you act this U on M itself, so when S smaller than zero, then corresponding to say under law translation, so of course you take M to itself under law translation. In particular, if it's some value, you can take M to N, okay? But now if you take S greater than zero, and then the S greater than zero, we are going to translate this M, this right Rindler region to the future region, okay? So in the sense that when you take S greater than zero, you can generate, okay? If you start with the Rindler right and left, it can generate the future and the past region from the right and the L region, okay? So in the sense, if you just give me the operator algebra of a quantum field theory in the Rindler right and the right and L region, and I only know the Rindler time, which is the boost, okay, generated by the boost, I can actually just use that information, okay, to construct the full Minkowski space-time. Okay, I can construct that full Minkowski space-time. And so we will use exactly the similar analog, okay, to construct the this future and the past region of the black hole using the right and the left region of the black hole geometry, okay. Actually I'm running a little bit late. So let me just be a little bit quicker. So the key is that now you have to identify a type 3-1 Bonhoeffer algebra and the appropriately chosen subalgebra, and then that can lead to new emergent times. Okay. So as I mentioned, that the standard time, which we can imagine any combination of HR and HL just cannot do the job, okay? And in particular, HR plus HL, they just don't act on the geometry. Okay, so now I will talk about how do we construct this kind of emergent new time. So go back to this black hole, say as black hole is described, so internal black hole ideas is described by CFTL and the CFTR in the thermal field double state. So if you're at finite N, then the bounded operator algebra of the CFTR and the CFTL, they're both type one. Okay, they're just trivially type one. Okay, because they act on the respective Hilbert space. Okay, at finite N. But I want to argue in the infinite N limit, okay, in the large N limit, or when you do say our discussion below will either corresponding to you can see the infinite n limits, or you can see the finite but not n, but then we do only for one of n expansions. Okay, it's an emergent structure for one of n expansions. Okay, you can consider just a large finite n, but this is structure pertaining to the perturbation theory. So now we want to argue there's an emergent type 3Y monomial algebra in the large n limit. And in particular, this emergent type 3Y monomial algebra leads to the emergence of a sharp horizon under the interior. So now let's consider this algebra generated by single trace operators. Yeah, let's consider, for example, say in for super Yang Mills theory. And then we can look at the algebra generated by single trace operators, okay, in the CFTR. So in the large n limit, and this algebra actually closes, okay, just understand the product and the superposition. And so in the large n limit, okay, so in the infinite n limit, the original Hilbert space become rather tricky, okay, because it's actually the original Hilbert space don't really have where to find the large n limit, okay. And but in the large n limit, actually there's emerges a lot of new Hilbert space, okay. So we can actually construct a new Hilbert space around the Sommerfeld double state. So heuristically, just imagine you take the Sommerfeld double states, okay, and now imagine you just act single trace operators on the Sommerfeld double state. Okay, so this defines what we call the small excitations around the Sommerfeld double state. So by the definition, the energy generated will be order one. Okay, excitation energy will be order one. It's independent of n. And you can actually prove rigorously that in the infinite n limit, in the large n limit, or in one of n perturbation theory, this is actually a Hilbert space. Okay, this is an emergent Hilbert space in the large n limit, okay, which you can prove rigorously using this called GNS procedure. Okay, the details are not important, but just the heuristic is very simple. So this is just the excitations around the Sommerfeld double states from the single trace operators, from product of single trace operators. And now you can look at the representation of this single trace operator algebra on this GNS Hilbert space, okay? And we call this MR. Okay. So this MR is different from this algebra of AR acting on the original Hilbert space. Okay. And so the claim, so you can do similarly with ML. So the claim that this MR and ML are type one monomial algebras. And so there's various support we can give to this conjecture. And you can look at spectral functions of single trace operators, behavior of spectral functions. And you can look at, you can show that there exists the half-sided modular translation structure, which is unique to the type 3Y monomial algebra. And then let me just mention the last aspect, which is the consistency of the duality with the bulk. Okay. So now let me just rephrase the standard duality with the region outside the horizon using this operator algebraic language. So in the bulk, we consider, say, G Newton goes to zero limits, the perturbative in G Newton. And then this just boils down perturbative quantum field theory in the curved space time. So here we can construct the Hartle-Hawking state, and then you can construct your Fock space of the bulk field around the Hartle-Hawking vacuum. And then you can also say, let's call the field operator algebra in the right region M tilde R, and in the right left region M tilde L. And so this is essentially the structure of the box theory. And the standard ADS-CFT dictionary for the region outside the horizon then can be written in the following way, that we essentially identify this GNS Hilbert space around the Sommerfeld double state with this Fock space of the around the black hole. The vacuum in the GNS Hilbert space associated with the Sommerfeld double states with the Hartle-Hawking vacuum, and then you identify the operator algebras. Okay, you identify the single trace operator algebra in this GNS Hilbert space with the operator algebra in the red region of the black hole, and similarly ML with ML. Okay. So essentially the duality now become the identification of the operator algebra and the Hilbert space around thermal field double state in the gravity side. Yeah. And now for this duality to work, and this R and L region are just some sub-region for this Bach theory, okay? And as I mentioned that if you have a quantum field theory and the general operator algebra for sub-regions type 3.1, okay? And so this M tilde R and M tilde L should be type 3.1 when we measure. So that is means that this MR and ML should also be type 3.1, okay? And so this is needed also just for the consistency of with the duality. Anyway, so then finding this US then boils down to finding appropriate volume subalgebra of this MR. Okay, if we find some appropriate subalgebra for this MR, then we can actually construct the new time. Okay, so let me just outline. So where are the theorems of this half-sided modular translation ensure the existence of US? Okay, but finding it explicitly in general is very difficult. And finding this G is very difficult. Okay, so explicitly construct G is difficult. It's even not easy for free theory. It's only known for a few isolated examples, including the Windler. But in the large N limits, the algebra of single trace operators in this GNS Hilbert space can be described by that of a generalized free field theory. Okay. And so it turns out in this limit, we can actually significantly constrain looking at how this US acting on this generalized free theory, we can significantly constrain the structure of this US. Okay. So this is a non-trivial story I will not have time to explain. So we can significantly constrain the structure of this US, how it acts on this generalized free field. Okay, it turns out that this expression of this US have a universal form. Okay, then up to a phase factor, which depends on specific algebras or specific operators, et cetera. For example, it will depend on the dimension of the operators. Okay, so we only worked it out for the scalar operators. So it could also depend on the spin, et cetera. Okay, so anyway, so we worked this out explicitly. So we can show that for any scalar operator, it has a universal form. Then up to a phase factor. Okay, the phase factor depends on specific algebra, depend on specific operators, their dimension, etc. Yeah, so I'm not writing down this expression, the expression is in the paper. So now it boils down, we just need to find this phase factor. So before doing that, let me just mention one very simple but important fact. So consider if you have a causal diamond, and then let's look at two Cauchy slices in this causal diamond. And then let's look at operator algebra associated with these two Cauchy slices, which I call A1, A2. So if you have a standard quantum field theory, then A1 is equal to A2. Okay, these algebra are just equivalent, the same. So the reason is that A2 can be just expressed in terms of the Heisenberg evolution, in terms of the operators on A1 and vice versa. Okay, they're just determined by the causal structure. But this is not the case if you restrict to single trace operators. Okay. So for the single trace operator, this algebra A1 and A2 actually are inequivalent. So the reason is the following. If you evolve A1, say operate on A1 using the Heisenberg evolution, okay, that actually take you outside the single trace operator algebra. Okay, that take you outside the single trace operator algebra. And this is also easy to understand from this generalized field language. By definition, this generalized field don't satisfy any equation motion. So there's no way you can relate operator on A1 to operator on A2. Okay. So that means that the operators on different Cauchy slices are actually inequivalent. So this actually generates many, many new scenarios and possibilities. In particular, this generates many new possible ways to find the sub-algebras. Okay, so for example, let's just consider this example. So let's consider this is the boundary manifold. And suppose this is the time, suppose this is the 1+1 dimensional boundary manifold. The vertical direction is is time, and the horizontal direction is a circle, which is the left and the right identified just 1+1 dimension for simplicity. So now you can look at the operator algebra associated with the full space time, the single trace operator algebra associated with full space time. So let's call it M. And then you can also look at the sub algebra associated with the time smaller than zero, or the operator single trace operator associated with T smaller than zero. So if at the finite N, if you look at the general operator algebra, the M and N are trivially equivalent because they all can be reduced to the operators on a single Cauchy slice, and then they're just trivially the same. But if you look at the single trace operator algebra in the infinite N limit, then they're inequivalent. Okay, the N is a generating sub-algebra of M. So now our claim is that this will generate this new emergent time. Okay, and you can also do it, choose N to be say T greater than zero part of the single trace operator algebra. You can also choose infinite then many others. So you don't have to choose you can choose N to be smaller than some Cauchy slice in your boundary a manifold. This Cauchy slice you can choose arbitrary. Okay, and or greater than some Cauchy slice. Okay, so this so each of them will correspond to a new emergent time. Okay, so this powerful theorem guarantees that there exists such kind of G. So now let me just talk about one particular example, this corresponding to this U N for T smaller than zero. So as I mentioned, we can reduce the action of this U just to a single phase factor, but actually finding this phase factor, even the at this generalized free field level is still non-trivial. Okay, because this generalized free field is defined by strongly coupled theory. Okay, because the dual to the box geometry is a strongly coupled boundary theory. So this still involving a strongly coupled problem. But we can actually solve this, find this phase factor through a trick. Okay, so we propose, that the operator algebra in this region N, okay, in this region N corresponding to T smaller than zero, is equivalent to the operator algebra in this, in the entanglement wedge associated with this region N in the black hole geometry, which we call N tilde. So the claim is the Bach operator algebra in this N tilde is equivalent to the operator algebra in N, okay. And so this may be considered as a generalization of the entanglement wedge. Okay, so the standard definition of the entanglement wedge is always associated with the RT surface, et cetera, or HRT surface. So here we define the entanglement wedge algebraically. Okay, so we consider the operator algebra associated with some boundary space-time region, and then we define the entanglement wedge for the bulk based on the equivalence of the operator algebra. Okay, so here there's no RT surface, no HRT surface. And now with this identification, which we have worry support, which I will not explain here, we'll not have time to explain here. And with this identification, and then you can actually work out this phase factor by using this Bach field theory. So now this become a free field theory in the Bach. Yeah, in the Bach, this is just free field theory. It turns out this phase factor is precisely corresponding to the phase factor, say for a scalar field, a scalar operator, this corresponding to the phase shift of this scalar scalar field in the black hole geometry. So remember, the scalar field in the black hole outside in the region outside the black hole is like a scattering problem. So you can have the plane wave coming outside the past horizon, then hit the boundary, scatter, and then you fall into the future horizon. So that scattering problem has a phase shift. It turns out that phase shift then is the phase shift corresponding to this half-sided module transmission. Okay. Anyway, so from here now you can fully determine this US, and now this then this is the pattern we generated from such a choice of U N. Okay, you can also do this way. So N is T greater than zero, And then we propose that this the corresponding entanglement vector, this is until the region in the bulk. And then that will generate a different flow pattern. So this is what we call the V flow pattern. So along this horizon is just like a translation along the V direction. Okay. And so the other is more like a U kind of flow. This is like a V kind of flow. And you can also compose them. Okay. You can compose them. So in principle, you can generate you can compose them arbitrarily to generate infinite kind of flows. You can also consider inhomogeneous flows along the spatial directions. Anyway, so I think it's rather late. So I can just stop here and take questions. And if people,
Thank you very much. Are there more questions for Hong? Yeah, I have a question. Is this construction related to the Papadopoulos-Serraggio construction? And
how? Different. So in there, so they have a construction. Depend on what specifically by their construction. So they have a construction of the operator. Yeah, that's what I mentioned at the beginning. So both HK and L, and this Papadopoulos and the Raju, they have a construction of say if you take an operator in the future region, they can express them in terms of the operator in the boundary theory. Okay. But their construction, in order to do that, they explicitly used the Kruskal time evolution as input.
Right.
So here we are not interested in that formula, say how you express the future region in terms of those operators. We're interested in how to understand how do you describe the Kruskal kind, how to the emergence of this Kruskal-like time. Yeah. That they use that as input. Yeah.
And can you do a similar construction when you have a single sided black hole? Because I understood that it's important that you have an operator that involves both the left and the right Hamiltonians.
Yeah. I think in principle you can. So I think you can. The story is a little bit more intricate. Yeah. So we are. This is something we are thinking right now. Yeah. It's a little bit more intricate, but I think you can. Yeah.
Let's thank Hong again. Thank you for the very interesting talk.